Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine-Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Wealth, Poverty, and Politics is Thomas Sowell's wide-ranging examination of why some groups, regions, and nations become more prosperous than others, and why poverty proves so persistent despite good intentions and ambitious policies. Instead of treating economic outcomes as simple moral scorecards, Sowell emphasizes how history, geography, culture, and institutions shape incentives and constraints over long periods of time. The book challenges popular narratives that attribute disparities primarily to exploitation or discrimination, arguing that many differences in income and development arise from complex, interacting factors that are often ignored in political debate. Drawing on comparative examples across countries and eras, Sowell critiques explanations that rely on single causes and highlights the unintended consequences of policies designed to equalize outcomes. Readers can expect a direct, data-oriented approach that presses for careful definitions, measurable evidence, and a willingness to separate emotional appeals from causal analysis. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, geography, resources, and the uneven starting line. A central theme is that material outcomes are heavily influenced by physical and environmental constraints long before politics enters the picture. Sowell emphasizes how navigable waterways, climate, soil quality, disease burdens, and proximity to trade routes can raise or lower the cost of producing goods and moving them to markets. These advantages compound over time as regions with lower transaction costs attract capital, specialized labor, and knowledge networks. He also draws attention to the limits of natural resources as a simple explanation. Resource wealth can be a benefit, but it can also distort incentives, encourage rent-seeking, and reduce the urgency of building broad productive capacity. By focusing on geography and logistics, the book pushes readers to reconsider claims that differences in national income are primarily the product of modern political choices. The practical takeaway is that comparisons across places must account for the underlying cost structure of doing business and building infrastructure. Development strategies that ignore these fundamentals often disappoint because they treat prosperity as a switch that can be flipped by legislation or aid, rather than as a long-run accumulation of capabilities that respond to real-world constraints. Secondly, culture, human capital, and the transmission of skills. Another major topic is how cultural patterns and human capital formation affect economic performance. Sowell discusses how attitudes toward education, time horizons, savings, family structure, and work routines can influence productivity and social mobility. Rather than presenting culture as fixed or biological, the argument centers on how practices are learned, reinforced, and transmitted across generations, especially through families, communities, and institutions that reward certain behaviors. Differences in literacy, numeracy, occupational skills, and entrepreneurship are presented as important drivers of group outcomes, often predating a particular policy regime. The book also highlights how migrant groups can perform differently in new environments, suggesting that portable skills and norms matter alongside local conditions. Importantly, Sowell cautions against treating statistical disparities as proof of discrimination without examining intermediate variables such as age distributions, educational attainment, location, industry concentration, and experience. For readers, the value lies in the framework. If you want to understand income gaps, look for mechanisms that build or hinder skills, credibility, networks, and performance in labor and product markets. Policies that neglect these mechanisms may change headlines without improving underlying capacity. Thirdly, institutions, incentives, and the rules of the game. Sowell places institutions at the center of long-term prosperity, focusing on how laws and governance shape incentives to invest, innovate, and cooperate. Property rights, contract enforcement, stable money, predictable regulation, and limitations on corruption reduce uncertainty and make long-horizon planning possible. When institutions reward productive effort and penalize predation, resources flow toward enterprise and experimentation. When institutions do the opposite, talent is diverted into rent-seeking, political influence, or black markets. The book critiques the assumption that intentions are an adequate guide to policy quality, arguing that incentives and constraints drive outcomes more reliably than official rhetoric. It also stresses that institutional performance varies across time and place, and that copying the visible features of successful systems without their underlying norms and enforcement capacity can fail. Readers are encouraged to evaluate policies by asking concrete questions: what behaviors are being rewarded, what costs are being imposed, and what trade-offs are being hidden. This institutional lens also reframes debates about inequality by suggesting that the same policy can help one group while harming another, depending on how it changes the payoff to education, work, hiring, and investment. Fourthly, rethinking discrimination, exploitation, and one-cause stories. a recurring argument is that popular explanations for wealth and poverty often rely on one dominant cause, especially discrimination or exploitation, and that such stories can oversimplify reality. Sowell does not deny that discrimination has existed and can be consequential, but he pushes for careful causal reasoning and attention to comparative evidence. Differences in outcomes may reflect varying average ages, geographic concentration, educational pathways, or occupational choices, and these factors can be mistaken for direct effects of bias. The book also examines how group disparities can persist even when legal barriers fall, because skills, networks, and capital accumulate unevenly and take time to build. By broadening the causal map, Sowell challenges readers to distinguish between moral condemnation and empirical explanation. This matters for policy because misdiagnosing causes leads to interventions that may be symbolic, politically useful, or emotionally satisfying while leaving root drivers untouched. The analytical habit promoted here is to ask what measurable change would be expected if a proposed cause were dominant, and whether the data across different settings supports that expectation. The result is a more disciplined approach to debates that are often driven by slogans rather than mechanisms. Lastly, policy trade-offs and the unintended consequences of redistribution. The book also focuses on the trade-offs built into policies aimed at reducing poverty and inequality. Sowell argues that programs designed to help can change incentives in ways that reduce employment, weaken skill acquisition, or encourage dependency, especially when benefits decline sharply as earnings rise. He emphasizes that measured equality is not the same as broad well-being, and that policies must be judged by outcomes over time rather than immediate redistribution. Another aspect is the political economy of anti-poverty efforts. Once programs exist, they create constituencies, bureaucratic incentives, and narratives that can make course correction difficult. Sowell also critiques the tendency to treat income distribution as a static picture rather than a dynamic process where individuals and households move across categories over a lifetime. From this perspective, the key question is not only who has what today, but how policies affect mobility, investment in human capital, and the formation of stable, productive institutions. For readers, this topic provides a checklist for evaluating proposals. Consider behavioral responses, administrative realities, time horizons, and what is being sacrificed to gain an apparent improvement in a single metric. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a rigorous, comparative way to think about prosperity and hardship, including students of economics and public policy, journalists, business leaders, and voters tired of simplistic explanations. It will also appeal to anyone willing to examine uncomfortable trade-offs and to separate intentions from results. The main benefit is intellectual clarity. Sowell offers a framework for asking better questions about causation, measurement, and incentives, so that discussions of inequality do not collapse into slogans. That shift can improve a reader's life by making them more discerning about policy claims, more realistic about what can change quickly, and more attentive to long-run factors such as skills, institutions, and social norms. Compared with similar books that focus narrowly on redistribution or on a single historical grievance, this one stands out for its insistence on multiple interacting causes and for its broad use of comparisons across groups and countries. Even readers who disagree will find a useful discipline in its demand for evidence, definitions, and attention to unintended consequences, making it a worthwhile purchase for building a durable understanding of wealth and poverty debates. If you would like to support Thomas Sowell, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.